warn you people. We'll keep you warm right here at the Rob Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis. We have no choice.
No, we don't. I think warm with the bombshell news the Sun-Times broke today about Alderman Solis. You think about all the people who are the power brokers in the city right now who are thinking, now what did I say to Alderman Solis? Now let me just rack my brain over the last 2 years when he was wearing a wire. Unbelievable.
I'm racking my brain.
Are
I'm like,
you
did,
even
I ever,
you?
Did I ever meet
did
the
I
guy?
Did I ever talk to him?
What did I ever say to him?
Everybody.
I thought it was very classy of Alderman Solis to offer to resign his position immediately as alderman, and he knows that it makes people uncomfortable that he was an FBI informant at City Hall, which tells you everything you need to know about City Hall.
Well, the other thing that tells you everything you need to know about City Hall are the number of aldermen coming to say, well, you know, back in my day, you didn't tell on people. You didn't, you know, that's a snitch. What?
Right.
What about standing up for good government against corruption? How about being a whistleblower when you see wrongdoing? No, you're just supposed to fall yourself and not report the wrongdoing around you that you're part of? I don't know. You just wonder what the feds have or had on Alderman Solis. Or maybe he's acting in the name of ethical government. He just wants to stand up and wear a wire. Maybe.
You know, people talk about codes of silence in law enforcement. Right. And or in military places like that, where people's lives depend on each other. And even though that sometimes can go too far and tilt into illegality, a code of silence amongst legislators, amongst lawmakers, amongst politicians.
Is that right?
Is not right. I mean, not that a code of silence is ever completely right, but it's at least you can understand it with people whose lives depend on everybody trusting each other.
Well, on a system of government that's ethical and works for the people and your public servants, ultimately. I mean, that's what it's about. If there are payoffs being made and people being favored based on payoffs and not on the benefit of taxpayers or a fair process, then you should report that. You shouldn't be said, why are you standing up for this? Or like he should receive the scorn of wearing the wire.
Yeah, we just turn a cold salt there. No big deal.
What the?
Why is he doing this?
Snitches get stitches. Or worse.
Going to have to be in some kind of protection program.
I mean, it's just, you know, the codes of the street are not exactly how this. Well, that's what we expect out of our government.
It's not the mafia, right? It's government,
right? They represent us, and should they? I mean, is Danny Solis doing the best will for his own? For his own constituency the whole time, you know, one must wonder, because how do they tap him on the shoulder and tell him to wear a wire?
Exactly.
You gotta stop and think about that for a second. Yeah. Like, how did that conversation go?
I'm not just blindly pointing at City Hall and like, yeah, let's go with this guy.
Yeah. Who do you think fits the wire the best?
Yeah. The powerful chair of the city's zoning committee.
Who wore it best?
Wore a pest. Remember back in the day when they used to give you the big hug in politics at City Hall to pat you down to make sure? You know, that used to happen.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore.
The Me Too movement happened and, you know, things couldn't be as handsy anymore.
Well, the FBI doesn't use that kind of technology anymore anyway.
Something else going on.
All of a sudden, the guy's wearing glasses he wasn't wearing before. you might want to think about it. I don't know. How they handle it, however they handle it. The FBI over the years... Remember the Counselor's Row investigation? No relation. Counselor's Row is a restaurant across the street.
Yes.
Was a restaurant across the street from City Hall. And every morning, there was a group of aldermen that would sit at the same booth.
Yep.
Every morning.
Yep.
And so the FBI, it took a brain search at the FBI to figure out.
If we were to plant something in here, where would it go?
Put a listening device in the sugar container. I mean, and it was like, that was the easiest pickings ever.
Well, some are wondering maybe the brown paper bagging over the alderman's office, Alderman Burke's office, might have been to sort of remove some more than just computers and paperwork.
I don't know nothing about
Nobody
that.
Knows. Yeah. Nobody knows. But this is a powerful man to have been wearing a wire with a lot of access to the entire city power structure.
Okay.
Alderman Solis.
You know, every once in a while, I may just paraphrase The Godfather. You know, from time to time, these kinds of things happen. And it's good because, you know, then you get like all the business gets taken care of in this one thing. And then we move on. We get along.
Yeah. Well, you know.
See what happens. I think there's going to be a raft of indictments here.
Does seem that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Does seem that way. I'm just saying that a lot of people wondering what they might have said to him, thinking back a year or so ago.
A raft of indictments.
I got to get out of town for a while.
Yeah, Kevin's gone. An extended vacation.
You know, all these aldermen are freaking out.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, we saw a few retirements this year seemed like very flash things. Like, why? Well, yes. Why? Where's he going?
I got a timeshare in Panama.
No extradition in Panama, it turns out. It's a great place.
You know, backpacking overseas for the next year or two.
I don't know. I got to get that thing. You see, they're literally, they've got guys flushing their cell phones down toilets at City Hall right now.
Probably, though. It's probably, a lot of people are a little bit worried right now.
Yeah.
Oh, no question. You think about what this means.
Everybody's going to Cricket Mobile right now to get a new cell phone.
Go back to the flip phone burners.
Yeah, where do you get a flip phone these days, huh? Devon Avenue is looking like a good place to go phone shopping right about now.
Get your burner phone. Hey, I've been walking up and down the halls of City Hall right
perfect.
Now.
Can you imagine
burner
how much you'd
phone.
Make?
Get your burner phone here. All right.
Yeah.
But thank God there's good governance in Washington to look up to. Congressman Adam Kinzinger is going to join us. He has some thoughts on the maelstrom that is going on there. If you're just joining us, haven't seen a push notification or haven't heard the news yet today, Nancy Pelosi officially disinvited the President of the United States from giving the State of the Union address. And secondly, Michael Cohen is not going to testify now in front of the House Oversight Committee. We're going to talk to a member of the House Oversight Committee coming up a little bit about that. But he's not going to testify because he says he has been now threatened by Donald Trump. His family has been threatened by Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani. Public. So it's not like, you know, he's got a phone call he can point to because he's good at recording the phone calls, I'm told.
Very good.
That music means only one thing.
Yes, it does.
Congressman Maverick is on the phone with us. Adam Kinzinger from the 16th Congressional District here in the state of Illinois. And are you in Washington, Congressman?
I am. Mm-hmm. It's not as cold as there, but it's cold and hopefully talking to each other.
Yeah, how's it going? How's it going over there? How do you feel about this?
It's just wonderful. I mean, we're all getting along, you know, robust discussions. It's amazing. It's just how democracy is supposed to be.
All right, so the first of many stories I must ask you about, the State of the Union, now officially the Speaker of the House, your Speaker, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, has disinvited the President from making the State of the Union address, at least as long as there is a government shutdown. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's petty. I think there's a lot of pettiness going around on both sides. You know, look, I get that you don't want the President to have a national forum during this, you know, stupid battle we're in, but that's what happens when you lose the presidency. You know, I went to every one of President Obama's State of the Union speeches, was respectful even when I disagreed with him. I think it's petty. But that said, you know, look, she's a speaker and she can do that. I just think it's, you know, it's unfortunate we have to go down this route. This is it's a good tradition. It's not a tradition that's always been like this, you know, from the beginning of time, but I think it's a good tradition, and unfortunately, she's broken that, and hopefully we can get it back when we finally reopen this place.
Where do you think the President's going to hold the State of the Union? Because it doesn't seem as if he's going to back down and not hold one or issue some kind of written statement.
You know, it's interesting. I met with the President about 5 or 6 days ago, and he was talking a little about this, and he intends to give a speech. I'm not sure if it'll be, you know, State of the Union-like or if it's just going to be some kind of a campaign rally. I'm not sure. But I think he'll, you know, if he doesn't give a State of the Union-type speech, he'll probably go do what he does where, you know, he goes to a city and kind of has a big rally, which, frankly, if I was him, I'd actually do that, too.
Well, he'll get less coverage that way, though. If he doesn't call it the State of the Union address, the networks won't carry it live.
Yeah, and I think he'll probably do if I had to predict with my crystal ball, I'd say he will do something like that. It won't get as much coverage, but then take a rescheduled State of the Union when he finally can. I think that would be wise, but I think Nancy Pelosi really kind of looks small in doing this, but, you know, she's a speaker.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, I listen, you know, this is like he started it, but which he did, but it can be ended here, and this you know, there doesn't seem to be any hope in sight that there is going to be a resolution to this, as long as the wall, you know, Democrats say absolutely no to any extension of the wall, and he says, I want $5.7 billion for a wall.
Yeah, I mean, look, I actually think, using again my crystal ball, I think there'll be a resolution sooner than later. I don't know what that is or where it's going to come from, but the pressure is mounting, and so I think something will happen. And no, but let me be clear, nobody's going to win out of this. I mean, even if one side gets everything they want, nobody's going to win. This is a losing thing. And I thought the president's proposition, the compromise, was actually pretty good. And frankly, you know, I would have taken it because his total ask for the wall is $25 billion, let's keep in mind. This is five, and he put DACA and Dreamers, and I get the people say, you know, well, it's not a permanent fix, but the intention is it buys 3 years of space. So Congress should really be the one coming together and doing broad, comprehensive immigration reform.
Yeah,
and
there's
and
one problem
compel
with
it.
Okay, I get what you're saying, but there's one problem with that, which is that but 3 years puts him into the second year of his second term, and yeah, that allows him to campaign his entire time in 2020 on, I gave him, now your vote is going to be a vote to repeal DACA, because that's what I'm going to do if I am president of the United States. So he sets himself up for a campaign issue there that he thinks is a winner. I think America's just tired of the fight, and I think that DACA is one of those things that's a pretty clear, easy thing to understand. These are kids who don't necessarily even speak the language of their home country. And this is not just kids from Mexico or Central America.
Yeah.
These are kids from all over the world who are born here. Parents may have overstayed their visas or whatever it is. And we're going to toss them out of the country. That does not seem fair. That does not seem like the American way. And that does not seem like a really tough political thing to do unless you want to hold, it hostage. And $5.7 billion for a wall, he's only going to get 200 miles of it. Is that enough?
Yeah, I think it's a start. Look, I got a lot to digest there. On the wall side of things first, when you put a wall up in areas, and I've worked the border, and I'm actually going to go work it in a couple weeks again. When you put the wall up, you actually shrink the amount of border that has to be monitored at the depth level as areas that don't have walls. So basically what you've done is you've shrunk the part of the border that the border agents have to actively guard, and the technology and the people that can go apprehend illegal crossers. So I believe that there's a role for barriers. I don't care if you call it a wall,
right,
or flats or whatever, but barriers. On the DACA thing, I think the politics of this, I don't think the president wants to run against DACA because it's an 85% issue. People look at this and only the most hardliners say, you know, deport people that know no other country. So I think it's important to see that. But, you know, fine, and it's fine. If the Democrats see the president's proposal as not something they like, fine, that's their right. But come back with a counterproposal. But I got to be honest, that counterproposal should not, if you really want to get to a compromise solution, start with not a dollar for the wall or for barriers. And I think we can get to an agreement here. But both sides have got to come off, you know, we have to come off our side. The Republicans have to come off this idea of amnesty,
got it worked
that
out.
Everything's amnesty.
I got it worked out. I got the deal already.
Deal.
And now you just take this right now. I want you to just write this down on a cocktail napkin. I can find one for you if you can't find one. And, you know, you take it over and you call Nancy and you call Don and you get them in the room together. Go, here it is. I'll give you $3 billion for your wall and permanent DACA. Thank you. Good night.
I think if they counter with that, I think there's some negotiating room for sure. But I just think to get the permanent DACA, I'm not saying this is a way to punt. I believe that these are issues that really need to be debated in the broken House and the broken Senate. And the problem is, anytime we've tried, I've voted for multiple, frankly, comprehensive immigration reform solutions that fail to get a majority because, you know, there's so much no trust here. There's such a lack of trust. Republicans believe if they give DACA, they're not going to get border security. And Democrats believe if they give border security, they're not going to get DACA or Dreamers. We can do this, but we have to buy ourselves. We've had plenty of time, but now I think we have to compel a way somehow that we do not just DACA, not just $5 billion for the wall, a big comprehensive reform that I guarantee you 80% of the American people will love when it's done.
Okay, very quickly, we're out of time now because we've now wasted as much time as we have on anything because of these morons in Washington dealing with this. You want to talk about Venezuela, though, for a second, because big move today. It's not a lot, not stuff that a lot of Americans are talking about or thinking about right now. But in Venezuela, there is the opposition party. It's basically an unstable government situation there. But the opposition party guy has declared himself president. We're recognizing him for the moment, right?
Yeah. He by their constitution declared himself president because Maduro is illegitimate, and we recognized his presidency. Now that comes with a lot of cool stuff, like the ability now that the Federal Reserve can only release funds to the government controlled by this opposition leader, since he is now recognized and no longer recognizes Maduro when it comes to international banking issues and stuff. So there's a lot that comes with it. The Venezuelan people want and deserve freedom, and frankly, we have to pay more attention to our own hemisphere, too, and this is about as big as it gets in our hemisphere right now.
Okay, so read up on that if people want to do that. And also, they're a big oil provider here, too. So
yeah.
It's something important for the economy. All right. Right. Thank you, Congressman. Appreciate it.
Get things sorted out for us.
Fun issues.
Get it sorted out over there for us, please.
Start with that. You know, just walk in there with that and see what happens.
Oh, and real quickly, I don't think you would have a hard time finding a cocktail napkin around you. I think there's probably plenty of them.
A few in Washington?
I
how about there,
sue
too?
Sue you for that.
No, him.
I'm Rose.
Goodbye, Congressman.
See you guys.
Now you've got a man.
Rocancho with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, Mr. Skilling.
Thursday extends some cloudiness, becoming quite windy.
Wait, what is
that wasn't the Skilling. We wanted to hear the live. Is that live Skilling?
That's apparently
I think
he's recording
Tom recording
something
in the newsroom.
Oh, yes.
So he's got to get that taken. Well, he's probably also avoiding you, let's face it, because he knows.
You honestly don't want to hear
he
it
is
after
pretending
what
I just said. He's pretending to record so we don't have to talk. Yeah. I think is what's going
on. He's like, oh, was I scheduled to be on WGN Radio as I am every day?
Veteran move by Tom.
Still doing it, by the way. Here, right?
And a reading is 28 degrees below normal at 3 above on Friday.
Oh.
Saturday, generous sun, 7 above. Oh. And Sunday, more clouds, plus trees, some snow showers, high 15.
Can't even hear us.
From the WGN Weather Center, I'm Tom Skilling.
That was just like peeping in.
Thank you, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
All right, have a great day.
You too, and stay warm, Eric.
Who's Eric?
That's Eric Rung.
That's our Eric. Okay, I thought he was talking to like somebody over at Amazon or something.
No, talking to our Eric.
Okay.
Just all goes right to show he is the nicest guy on and off the air.
So true. Yeah.
Thank you, Eric. Tom.
Tom, are
can
you there?
Can somebody tell Tom that we're talking to him now?
Eric, can you tell Tom?
Eric, tell Tom.
Get Tom Eric, on the blower.
Maybe he's hanging up with Tom. Maybe he's only talking to Eric today, not you.
I did. I got the forecast.
Yeah, but they need to talk to him.
Eric, we need you to tell
he's
Tom to talk
you
to us.
He hung up on him.
He's avoiding you.
Tom?
Yes, hello, okay, guys. I'm sorry.
No,
I didn't know we were doing this early today.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, all right. Well, that's on us. So
no,
be, you
it
know
may
what?
Be me. I may have missed Jeffrey's email or something. Good to talk to you guys, though. Happy Wednesday.
Oh, don't even start. What? This is that's the worst, what you just did right there. Hey, happy Wednesday. What do you mean, happy Wednesday?
Here we go, Anna, out to the woodshed.
I know. This is going to be a bad one, because I don't think he likes anything you said at all.
All right.
Hey, and if you love what's coming Friday, what do you see next week? This could be a snowstorm on Monday and an even colder air mass Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So suddenly we have winter operating on all cylinders.
Hold on. I want to ask you a question.
The sun sets at 5 o'clock and will do so from this point forward starting Sunday.
Okay, now I want...
That's the good news.
I know, that is the good... Okay. I know it's kind of good news, and I have other good news that I want to share with you in just a second.
Uh-huh.
But before we get to that good news,
yes,
I want you just give us a little bit of color on the Monday snowstorm. What do you think is going to happen there?
Well, I'll tell you. You know, we're days ahead of time, and there'll be people assigning numbers to it. We're getting some huge numbers off some of the models. And it
just give us model numbers.
You know what? I'm not going to attach numbers to it because I just think it's too early.
All right.
You know, we get raw numbers that go right now from, five to 9 inches, but mm-hmm. we have other models that go much higher than that.
Oh, boy.
And that's typical this far ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
But it's what it is a supercharged Alberta Clipper that's going to come in here. It'll do so on the nose of a jet stream. There'll be lake moisture, and there's a brutal Arctic air mass behind it. So this kind of puts all the wheels in motion atmospherically to generate a storm. So that's something we got to watch.
Got to tell you, that supercharged Alberta Clipper, if you could find one of those on the street now, they're worth a lot of money from the 1970s. Can I ask, but that's not the Alberta Clipper as a weather phenomenon.
Right.
Is not generally a gigantic,
because
it moves so fast. It's not a big weather. It's not a big snow provider.
See, you really are plugged into the weather, Ro, because that's absolutely right. Now, on rare occasion, and I shouldn't say rare, it's just not infrequent, these things can charge up. They'll get a hold of some moisture from the Gulf. They'll have a little extra added upper air oomph, and mm-hmm. we've got that in this one, and that's brought on in part by the expectation that bitterly cold air is going to be diving into the country. And these jet streams strengthen when that happens, because their strength depends on how big the temperature change is across the country. Well, if you introduce brutally cold air next to the normally cold winter air to the south, which is a lot warmer by comparison, you get extraordinary temperature differences and strong upper winds, and those drive the forces that develop these storms. But this, if you look at this right now, we've had a whole series of model runs that put the axis of the heaviest snow through northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin. Over the last couple of days, that axis has run from central Illinois up to southern Wisconsin, so sort of oscillating in that spatial arena. But that puts us close to the action zone, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that at all. And we'll add a little lake moisture to it, too. So
hold on 1 second, Tom, which is brought to us by Permaseal Basement Systems. But Kim wants to break in from the newsroom.
Ro, we've been following that active shooter situation at that bank in Florida, and now appears 5 people have been killed.
Wow.
All right. Thank you, Kim. More on that coming up at the top of the hour.
Talk about the wind chills a little bit, because that's coming our way sooner, right? Thursday night into Friday.
It's interesting. We're talking about chills getting down to 20 to 30 below toward morning Friday and staying 15 to 30 below during the day. Coldest, obviously, in the morning. But they put a wind chill watch out now, officially, through the west and north suburbs. I can't believe that won't be extended into the city tomorrow night and Friday morning. And, what's happening here, we're developing a good old-fashioned Siberian Express pattern. That's where you get the jet stream, one branch of it, to come out of Russia's Siberia, where you have this vast snow-covered surface over which cold air can develop, and it's dark at this time of the year. And so that brings the cold air over the pole, mixes it with the cold air that develops on our continent, and that provides us our coldest air masses.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting, this will be the coldest air mass in the hemisphere on the planet relative to what's normal. In other words, we'll be more below normal in this air mass than will any other location, because a lot of the hemisphere is warmer than normal. They've been melting roads in a heat wave down in Australia, for instance, and much of Eastern Asia is unusually warm. Alaska will be unusually warm in coming days.
Okay, so speaking of Alaska, I did want to mention this. This is one of the happy moments of the day.
Oh, good.
Is that in this, at least, listen, it's going to be bad. It's January. We expect it to be bad. Not as bad as what Tom's talking about, but it's going to be bad anyway.
Well, it's been a pretty quiet winter so far.
I know, and I was enjoying that until just now. Yeah. And, I'm not enjoying this.
Trying to ease the blow.
Thank you. But I read this morning, and as you mentioned, the sun's going to go down after 5 o'clock on Sunday, and then at 5, and then, we move beyond that. And that's always great. That's always a great moment
for me
when we're beyond, we're on the other side of that mountain.
Sure.
But up in what was once called Barrow, Alaska,
right,
and now it's got a name that I cannot pronounce.
I know. Why
did it change names?
Boat.
It's the Inuit. They're going back to the Inuit name.
Oh.
That's right. So just like part of the same thing that, changed McKinley to Denali.
Right.
Back to the native name.
Utqiagvik, I think is what, that's as close as I can get to
Utqiagvik.
Yes.
There you go.
Utqiavik.
I know.
Perfect.
The only thing more difficult than a name like that is the name of these glaciers in Iceland, you know, when you have to go and figure out how to pronounce those.
I just learned it was fjord, not fjord. Anyway, the point is this, that this is the sun is going to rise today in
Utqiagvik
for the first time in 66 days.
That's right.
Oh, dear.
That's right.
Wow.
So
imagine that.
That marks the beginning of the end for the, you know, the bitter polar vortex. The problem is it takes about 3 months to achieve that, you know, but the days lengthen at that latitude very quickly, just as in the fall they shorten very quickly up there.
You mean in the town of
Utqiagvik?
That's right. You know, I'm glad to see somebody else does that. You know, you can go on to YouTube and the internet and find these.
The pronouncers, very helpful.
Isn't it the truth?
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone through that one. In fact, they ran a tape on
that. That did not help me, that thing. I still can't say it after I hear the person say.
Utqiagvik.
Yes.
Yes.
It's very challenging for people like
for
us, right,
Inuit speakers.
Yeah.
Well, what about all the Inuit names for snow, Ro? You were mentioning those yesterday. Yeah. There's so many of them, but none of them are pronounceable either.
Now we have them, though. Now we have our own ones now, too. It's too much. I don't want to think about it. In English is what I meant. Mm-hmm. The issue here is that I want to feel good about the fact that the sun is rising in the northern, you know, up on the North Pole, essentially, right? That the North Pole is getting a little peak of the sun.
Yes.
Because that means that it will start to warm up that air mass. And then you have to drop that it's going to take 3 months to warm up that air mass. And it puts me right back where I started this whole conversation.
And it takes another month or two to melt a lot of the snow up in the north end of the continent. So it's a slow process, you know. Okay. But, it's a positive sign.
Although there's no ice, still very little ice.
On Lake Michigan. We have a view of that here, Tom, and we do monitor. Ro actually monitors that throughout the show every day.
I go out there with a yardstick.
He's very worried about it. This winter that not enough ice on Lake Michigan.
It's interesting. I wish I could give you a number on that, but the government shutdown means we're not getting those data.
Oh, what? You're kidding me.
No, so we don't get the ice coverage stuff. That's one of the many fields that we're not missing with our federal workers being
unbelievable.
Furloughed.
Unbelievable.
But, but it has grown, the coverage, just from visual observation exponentially in the last 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
It's really amazing. But that's really when the Arctic air started coming in here. Now, one other positive note, and I'm watching with interest. If you go out toward the end of the 15-day runs on our medium-range models, they're kind of pulling the vortex back up north again and developing a more zonal flow across the country. Could this be a signal that we're going to get these harsh, this set of barbaric cold air masses in the next week and a half, and then beyond the first week, say in February, start moderating it some? That does not mean to imply in any way, shape, or form there won't be additional cold air, but these will probably be two of the most severe hits of the winter, and then part of it is that lengthening day that you mentioned.
The lengthening day in the little town that once was called Barrow, Alaska, and is now called
Utqiagvik.
Say, can I borrow that from you, that video? Because
you might be able to use that.
That's like an 8-year-old telling us, too, which makes me feel even worse.
I've got to put that on one of those little portable tape recorders, and when I'm on television, I'll say, and look at the temperature up here, and then I hit the play button, you know, and get it to
Utqiagvik.
There we go. That's it.
Here you go. See? All right. Thank you, Tom.
Well, Ro, it's
going
a
great.
Pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
You know, Anna, I think that went pretty well.
I do, too. Considering the circumstances, excellent job, Tom.
It's nice to have an 8-mile distance between the two of us and be working at the end of one of these T-Wormel audio lines whatever they're called.
I like how you kind of avoided him at the top, too. That worked out really well, too.
Tom's afraid I'm going to start throttling him.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, it's going to be.
Well, if I was down there in your presence, I'd ask Anna to, check on baseball bats and make sure none of them are in the immediate vicinity or anything like that.
Any sort of weaponry we would clear from the studio prior to you coming in.
2x4s, chairs that are
easily moved. I could lift one of these chairs. Just in these chairs. All right, thank you, Tom.
See you, guys.
Bye.
Thanks, Tom.
Bye. Coming up next hour, your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Hawks take on the Knuckleheads. Upon their return, the Knuckleheads, the Vancouver Canucks.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just like to say that, you know, when you hear the word Canuck, it seems that, isn't that like a slur against the Canadian?
Well, it rhymes with some good, you know, you can see where people can go with that.
No, we're going
to. What would it rhyme with?
Yeah,
Anna,
what are you talking about?
I want to hear Anna say that word
yeah,
one time.
Yeah, right.
I don't think I've ever heard Anna swear before.
Well, I've been to, you know, Hawks fans are very friendly, actually, so they don't hear a lot.
Oh, right.
You don't hear a lot of that.
Never
until
once.
Detroit comes in, and mm-hmm. then that changes
Detroit
things.
Detroit sucks, yeah. We know
that,
to be the truth.
But Canucks opens up to other territory.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to be Thursday, February 7th, courtesy of, I think we're at that game, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing, for all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com. Those for your chance to win tickets all regular season long.
Well, big teach young Kevin on that day what rhymes with Canuck.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it.
A little lesson.
Trust me, we're all looking forward to that moment when Anna teaches us how to swear. I can just imagine what that's going to be like. All right. Right now, Kim Gordon is standing by. She's in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with the news coming your way in about 2 minutes right here on 720 WGN. Lester Holt joins us on the other side of that. Stay tuned. Con Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN. That music means only one thing. Lester Holt joins us.
Yes.
Everybody has their own theme song on this show, which is really
I like
something.
Lester's the best.
Yeah, it really. Well, John Williams. Yeah. I mean, when you have an Oscar winner writing your theme song. I don't have an Oscar winner writing my theme song.
No.
I don't know. It doesn't seem right.
E.T. recommended him to us, so we decided to go with him.
All right. So much going on, Lester. I mean, this is what a crazy day this is. All right, let's start with the shutdown is now, according to Nancy Pelosi, requiring her not to offer an invitation to the president to do the State of the Union address from the House of Representatives a week from last night. I mean, where do we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, essentially she's telling the president she won't authorize, you know, the House chamber until the government has reopened. But it's, you know, this we've seen this power politics before. You know, he canceled her flight to Afghanistan. You know, I think right now she appears to still have the leverage. The president's approval rating is slipping, apparently, you know, linked to the shutdown. And, you know, she had put out that letter a couple of weeks ago suggesting that he postponed. He didn't get back until, I guess, today. Essentially saying, okay, we're good to go, and then she responded that, no, we're not good to go. Not in my house, essentially.
Yeah.
And do you think that move, though, helps the Democrats at this point? I mean, it does seem as if this is something that people expect of a president, and, you know, we voted for, he won a Democratic election, and this is kind of what our presidents do every year, even if we know it is a political thing.
Yeah, you're not required to do it in the House chamber. It's tradition because it has the seating capacity to get, you know, both houses of Congress together, as well as other invited guests. And to our knowledge, it's never happened before, but there's no requirement that a president, you know, make the State of the Union in this formal manner. They've done that, you know, since television's been around before that. They wrote it, but, you know, presidents typically don't pass up a chance for primetime television. So I think what you're going to see, and the president's always suggesting that, you know, Nancy Pelosi doesn't want to hear the truth, so he'll try and use this for political gain. The question we were weighing was, where might he give the speech, or will he just outright cancel it? Mm-hmm. Cameras were there in front of him today. He was kind of signaling that it might just get canceled or postponed, but he has other options. You know, he could do a rally. He could, you know, he could do it in the Oval Office, but apparently just not in the House chamber.
Yeah, he said we'll have a response to Nancy Pelosi in due course, but we haven't really heard the answer yet.
Yeah, but it's, the whole thing is ugly. I mean, let's face it. I mean, it's and no uglier than for these people who they're about to miss that second paycheck. So, you know, if it hurt a little bit, you know, 2 weeks ago, it's going to hurt a lot. For a lot of folks.
This whole thing sucks, and everybody's playing politics here. I thought that there was at least a bit of an upper hand by Nancy Pelosi in terms of if she had stayed classy San Diego, she may not, you know, I think that would confer better to her and the Democrats. But by doing this, it seems like she's playing the same kind of games that he's playing and not getting down in the mud. And I don't want America to be in the mud. I want America out of the mud. And I don't, I mean, I'm in the opinion business. You're not, Lester, but I would just say that I'm tired of all of the norms being broken here, and for Democrats to jump in and do this, or for Nancy Pelosi to jump in and break another norm for us, it gives me less hope that we're ever going to get back to any kind of stasis here as Americans and comport ourselves in the way that is really, really, really up to the dignity of this institution, which is
I don't think it's an unreasonable opinion to take. I mean, I think we all want a functioning government, and we don't have one right now, and I'll leave it to others to point the finger and all that. But I think that right now, you know, Democrats are pressuring her to hold the line. I think there's a sense of, you know, if we cave to him on this, then we've set the precedent that anytime he doesn't get his way, the government gets shut down. And Republicans make their own strong arguments about border security, but you can't separate that from the reality of who this is hurting. And we keep focusing on this 800,000 number of federal employees who are out of work. I mean, extrapolate that, you know, to, you know, contractors and people who depend on government services and need to get things done, their airplane certified or their farm certified or whatever. I mean, it's a huge impact, and there is evidence that it is potentially eating away at our economy.
It's funny, we were just talking to Tom Skilling about he's the greatest local weatherman in the history of local weather television.
Yes.
One might surmise.
Even if you give him a hard time for what he's delivering lately.
I do, because we've had very bad weather here.
It's not fun to listen to.
We're, as a Chicagoan, Lester, as a former Chicagoan, you understand this, that you know, the amount of ice on the lake is a big deal here, and they can't get you a number. The people who do that have been furloughed to tell us what the ice coverage on Lake Michigan is. And, you know, you might not think that's a big deal to the people who don't have to navigate the lake, or people who don't have to do the weather forecasting, or all the other environmental issues that comport from that. And it's still at some point, I already figured it out. $3 billion for the wall, and you know, a DACA repeal, or make everybody safe who is, you know, currently in the United States. And we'll work on a pathway later for the people who are, you know, after this date set. And let's just move forward. Let's start that. Get the government open. Let's move forward. Give them a couple hundred miles of wall. We're good to go. Thank you. Goodbye. That's what I would do, but that's just me.
That's called compromise, though.
Yeah. That's not happening.
Right, exactly. All right. Okay, so now speaking of this, now the other big story you guys are working on for Nightly News is this of Michael Cohen. Now, Michael Cohen says he's not going to show up and testify on Capitol Hill in front of the House Oversight Committee about things because he feels threatened by Donald Trump. He feels that his family's been threatened by Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani. But is it up to him to make that decision? He's under subpoena, isn't he?
Well, I don't think he's under subpoena now, but he can be, and they can certainly request his presence. And Democrats seem to be signaling, "Hey, hold on a second, we need to hear from you." Now, whether that's going to be on the 7th as previously scheduled is the question. But so he is saying, and this came up a few weeks ago. Remember, the president had tweeted something about, "Well, take a look at the father-in-law. Mm-hmm. You know, the father-in-law is a very rich guy. Did he make a deal to keep his wife out of trouble?" And immediately, Cohen's lawyer said, "Wait a minute, families are off limits." And he had suggested, last week that this thing might get called off. And now they're basically saying, look, we feel threatened by the president of the United States. I mean, this is among the many, many phrases I never thought I'd be saying on television. This is what he's claiming tonight.
Yeah, but to be fair, if it is the father-in-law that they're talking about, the father-in-law's ties to the cab companies and the Fed's interest in that does tie back to Michael Cohen himself and his own involvement. So I don't know what the threat was made. I don't know if the threat was made or what was said, but it certainly is material to bring up the father-in-law in relation to Michael Cohen's own actions, right. I would think.
Yeah. I mean, you could argue it was a reminder, it was a shot across the about that, hey, you know, there are Republicans in that committee, and don't be surprised if these questions get asked.
I mean, different so if I, they say, watch out for your daughter or something, who has nothing to do with this. But
yeah, I mean, I think some people will look at this and with a little a scant eye about, you know, whether this is in fact a threat. But either way, it is giving him cold feet. And Democrats obviously very anxious after the things reported over the last week about, you know, what the knowledge of the Trump Tower Moscow was and how late, you know, those talks were going on. He's a star witness. They want to hear from him badly.
Right.
So Republicans are like, yeah, it'd be best if you don't show up because we don't want to really know about that. Although he's been told, we're being told that he won't be able to answer questions about anything related to Russia. So who knows? Yeah. It was just going to be a circus. All right, let's talk about something else that's at least, here's another moment of compromise. Lester, we can talk about this, which is you are doing a continuation of your series on justice in America, and you're going to be sitting down with Meek Mill, who is one of the figures who was fairly prominent in this recent bipartisan legislation, now signed into law by the president, to change criminal justice sentencing guidelines and reform the system so that we, for nonviolent offenders, we're not just warehousing them.
Yeah, and his focus is joining forces with a pretty powerful foundation. Robert Kraft of the New England Patriots, Michael Rubin, who's co-owner of the 76ers, a bunch of, you know, billionaires were up there on a stage with him today announcing this foundation for criminal justice reform. And they want to hone in on probation and what they see as a probation trap. 4.5 million Americans on probation at the slightest infraction, and you can be sent back to prison. And their argument is, why are we filling prisons with people making, you know, silly mistakes who have essentially served their time for the original crime? Meek Mill, I met him 7 months ago, back in April when he got out of prison. He had been sentenced to 2 to 4 years for a probation violation and had become, you know, kind of this the symbol of what's wrong with the system. And when I interviewed him, he says, look, you know, I'm going to take this and pay it forward. I'm going to become a champion of this. I want to be a voice for the voiceless. So there he was on stage with these, you know, major powerhouses in entertainment. Jay-Z was there and sports. And essentially, you know, getting on board and putting his money where his mouth is. So he's a, you know, he's a guy that, and he's still on the hook, by the way. I'm sitting there, we're in New York, and I'm interviewing him, and I say, well, your charges were in Pennsylvania, so you have to report where you go. So if you had come to New York and not told the court, you'd be in trouble right now. And he's like, yeah, I could actually be sent back to prison for that. I mean, that is what he sees as the absurdity of sometimes of the probation system. That's what they're trying to address.
Well, there's a way to update this, too, using technology. I mean, one of the things that, in terms of criminal justice reform and in terms of policing, and, you know, and finding bad guys, people who do bad things, that's all going to be changing at a very rapid pace over the next two decades because of the overlay of technology. There won't be a square inch of America that will not have a camera on it at some point.
Yeah.
There will not be. Facial recognition is going to be, as much as people, you know, were worried about their individual rights and probably should be, I mean, given everything else that we're dealing with here, that's probably a foregone conclusion that law enforcement will have this ability to connect up faces in places that people don't anticipate that they're going to be caught in. And that's just a reality here that's going to change things. And so this is an important, I think this is a very rudimentary step, but it's an important step in what's going to be much broader reform. Lester, thank you very much.
Yeah, you got it.
We'll see you tonight, 5:30. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Lester.
Take care.
Coming up, Chance Rufus offered tickets to see the Hawks take on the Canucks Thursday, February 7th. Her next return to the United Center. Courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing for all the right reasons. Four Seasons. Find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com. And you're listening for your chance to win tickets all regular season long. And the Hawks are on a streak. Two big wins.
Last night was fun. You know how, Ro, you always say you need to go to the UC so you can see the big, bright rink in the middle of the dark gray winter? That was me last night. The miserable winter night. I'm like, I'm going to the Hawks game. Such a great time yesterday. But you're right. It's perfect. It's a perfect medicine to a cold, nasty winter night in Chicago. It was a lot of fun last
night. That's true. That is totally true. And here we go. And they're, I don't know, let's see. I think they need to win 80% of the games remaining to make the playoffs. But
You never know.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
They're going to need a little help, as people like to say. They're going to have some other teams kind of go the other way on them. Yeah. It's not been the season of our dreams, but man, Taze and Kane are playing their keisters off.
Unbelievable. I mean, we talked to Savvy last time we were at the UC. He says this might be the best Patrick Kane's ever played. Think about that.
And it's and unfortunately, you know, they got some other problems. And again, I go back to this. Now, I'm going to try one more time, and we're there on the 7th. I'm going to try one more time to point out, and maybe this will finally get through to them, that it is important that at the end of the game, whether it's in regulation or overtime or shootout, that they have scored more goals than the opponent.
I love that philosophy.
Yeah.
It's very important.
They've given up more goals than any team in the NHL. It's obviously been the problem this year. 188 goals they've given up, more than anybody.
More than anyone.
So to Rose's point, give up less goals, and you'll probably be in much better shape than you are.
Yeah, see, that's
why I like it. Corey Crawford being injured.
Yeah, a little bit of that. A little bit of defensive struggles. Yeah,
but you know, he wasn't exactly the Corey Crawford of old either before he got hurt again. And we don't know. You know, there's really no timetable for return for him.
No, although he was on the ice the other day, which is a good sign.
Yeah, so we don't know what is going to transpire there. But they clearly do need to make some changes here. At some point on the defensive end of the ice, their end of the ice, that side of the ice.
Get Roe in the locker room to give a pep talk. Boys, the object of the game is to score more than your opponent.
Thank you and goodbye.
You told Cole Skeleton to make sure he mentions that.
I did tell him that.
When we were talking to him.
And then he looked at me with that sort of stun. It was his first day on the job, so I got to say anything I wanted to.
Yeah,
it was
his
first day on the job and my last opportunity to say anything sideways to the guy. So I did, and he didn't. And it was like, he looked at me like, is this guy a moron?
I know. Thanks,
serious,
dude.
Sir?
Great.
I had no idea what that guy just said to me. Is he out of his mind? That's what Jeremy Culleton's inside voice was saying.
It was in his eyes. You could read it.
Get me out of here. He's got that code to the media relations department. Blink 3 times in a row if you need us to get you the hell out of here.
Hey, guys, we're out of time. Thank you.
I can't believe they're making me talk to this moron.
Sorry, but I got to go.
So sorry.
How do I say sorry to him? I don't think I want to. I just want to get out of my chair.
How do you say sorry in Canadian?
Oh man! Anyway, that went well. Anyway, the point is that it's still a good. It's always great, and there is, you know, there's always hope. There's hope till there isn't hope, and it's Kane and Taze. It's the Blackhawks. This is one of the great institutions in sports in the 21st century.
I mean, it was still packed house last night, considering the weather and where they're at in the standings. It was still a rowdy night at the UC.
You do see that.
Tells you a lot about the fan base. Mm-hmm.
Tells you a lot about the drinking, too.
That's true.
Got the good, you know, there's a lot going on there, and there should be. Let's be honest. Yeah. Just look at outside. I mean, look at where the people are coming in from. Oh, my God.
Feels like Canada.
It does. It's Canada without the charm.
People stumbling in. Do you have alcohol here?
Yeah.
It's horrible out there.
Chicago, Canada, but less nice. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, listen, we've got this mayor's race going on. Who knew? Mm-hmm. Almost every day we've had, because there's so many people in the race, we've had
a lot of choices.
A contestant for this, and I like to say contestant because sometimes it does feel more like a game show. And LaShawn Ford is with us, and LaShawn wishes to be the mayor of the city of Chicago. I start off these interviews with every single one of you with this question: why? What do you want? Why?
Why do I want to be mayor? First of all, I'm the best candidate. When you look at the field of candidates, I love the city of Chicago. I'm from the west side of Chicago. And we know that we have to make sure that the city includes the south and west sides of Chicago. And it's been forgotten about in the past. And so we're going to do everything that we can to bring this city to life. And I'm the person to do it.
I've heard you say you're not going to govern like any of the previous mayors, and that the big names are not ones we should consider. You should look at, we need to move in a new direction. I've heard you speak about that. But there are other progressives in the race as well. I mean, you've got a lot of choices. How do you distinguish yourself from those voices?
Well, you have people that say that they're progressive, but what you have to do is when you look to pick your leaders in government, you have to look at their real track record. Campaigns, people could talk all they want about what they're going to do. But the difference in this campaign, I'm a candidate with experience and with a track record. Progressive ideas and progressive actions is what you will find in if you look at my website, if you look at the work that I've done. I've supported the women's right to choose how they should deal with their own bodies. I've supported the immigration sanctuary state, and I support that for the city. I've supported reentry in the state long before any candidate, even Tony Pretwinkle, even thought about talking about restorative justice models. I've supported marriage equality. I supported civil union. I mean, my track record is
okay.
Proven.
That's all.
That's good.
That's all well and good, but those are not municipal issues.
They're not, but you know what? People in Chicago need to know the moral compass that I have and how I will govern with a lens of fairness.
So let's apply that then to municipal issues, which are, let's talk about policing. Let's start with that. What changes would you like to see at the Chicago Police Department?
Absolutely. I mean, with the Chicago Police Department, we have to deal with the fact that we have to have a new contract with the FOP. The FOP, they must come to the table and agree that the current contract that they're dealing with is bad for the police and it's bad for the communities. You know, we have to make sure that we get rid of that GAIN database. It's horrible for the city. What we know is...
Okay, let's stop on that for a second, because that's a relatively new issue in this. Why would you get rid of the gang database, and why is it horrible for the city?
Well, it's new in this, and that's what sets me apart from the other candidates. I've been working on the GAIN database in Springfield now for the last year and a half. So we have a bill in Springfield to eliminate the GAIN database, because you can arbitrarily put anyone on that database just because the police officer says he or she wants to put Roe on it. You don't have to give you an explanation. You don't have to know you're on it. But when you are pulled over or you apply for a job or you find
apply for a job. Wait, where does that come up?
Some employers could find out that you're on the GAIN database. And
through what mechanism, do you know?
You know, there is a mechanism where federal employers can find out that you are on a GAIN database. State employers can find out. I think it's LISC. Yes, there's no doubt that employers could find
government jobs.
Government jobs.
Okay. Right. I know that you've talked about economic development on the South Side and the West Side, and I think there's most people in Chicago would say that that is a fair point. We need that kind of development of overlooked communities. They need to have opportunities there, and education is another issue, and law enforcement and spending on police and that kind of thing. But we also have budgetary issues, and that this is the kind of thing that the next mayor is going to have to be involved with, making the city, rejuvenating those areas that need our attention, and the areas like education and things like that. But also, while sticking to a budget with big pension balloon payments due soon. And how do you balance those two?
Well, before you even think about, I mean, everyone knows that there's only two ways that you could fix the pension problem. One, you have to raise revenue. Two, you go to Springfield and you figure out a way to change the law. Well, before we talk about taxing the people in the city of Chicago, we have to make sure that we recognize that because the South and West Sides of Chicago is not the best that it could be, it costs all the taxpayers so much money, and it's causing all of us problems with the city's budget. Mm-hmm. Because we have so much racism and a police department that costs us millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, that impacts our budget. The fact that we have a Chicago public school that has a $7.5 billion unchecked budget, and the mayor is responsible for that budget because he appoints the board. Those type of unilateral decisions that the mayor has really hurts the budget. What we have to do to shore up some funds for Chicago's budget problems, we have to make sure that we work with our federal and state delegation. So we have a federal delegation of congressmen, U.S. congressmen and Senate. We have to make sure that they bring more money back to the city of Chicago, to the state of Illinois. Illinois is a donor state. We send a dollar to Washington and we receive less than a dollar back. That's horrible. Some states send a dollar and receive almost $8 back. Hmm. We have to make sure we're looking at this beautiful view, and many people that live down here wouldn't mind paying more to make sure that this city is stable. Because if the city is stable, the people that live in high rises that can afford to pay more will. So that means we have to make sure Ken Griffey Jr. pays more of taxes. We have to make sure that the new governor.
Well, Ken Griffey Jr. I love. Ken Griffey is going to leave the state if he wants.
He's not going to leave.
I think he will.
If he pays more.
Well, he's already leaving. He just bought a house in London. So I mean, there's the reality is that. If you can tax people out, you can tax businesses out. I don't think it doesn't necessarily follow that if you raise taxes that you're going to make more money, right?
Well, I mean, yes, if you raise taxes on high end salaries and people that make money like J.B. Pritzker, you're going to bring in more revenue. I mean, Chicago is a beautiful city. People will say that they will leave, but where are you going to go to get a city like this? I mean, there are a lot of assets that bring people to Chicago that I think that people will pay to be here.
Miami.
Yeah, it's, you know, they still don't have what we have. Look at this
Dallas,
view.
Houston. I mean, there's a lot of places that people are going to. Nashville. There's a lot of places that Chicagoans are finding their way to. I mean, it's about increasing. Well, would you agree with this? Because I know some of the other people who are running for mayor say that we need to actually increase the population in Chicago.
What would you do to encourage that? Well, one, we have to make sure that we get a complete count of the population in the city of Chicago. And we're going to have a census count in 2020. Chicago is undercounted. And that's a part of the reason why we are not getting enough federal dollars to the city of Chicago.
That's probably true, but how would you encourage people who do not wish to be counted because they're worried about their immigration status?
Well, that's a problem. So you have to work through all these problems that you may bring up. But the fact is, we have to shore up our numbers. There are a number of people in this city that's undercounted, and that's part of the administration's fault that we're not doing everything that we can to count all of our citizens in this city. Every citizen.
The mayor's administration.
That's right. Okay. Rahm Emanuel's, yes.
All right. Okay, so in terms of schools, you mentioned school budget.
Yes.
Are you indicating that you think it's too high?
No, I'm indicating that I think that it's unchecked and it causes corruption in the process. When you have a school board that's appointed by the mayor and no one else controls it but his appointees, that's why you have schools on the south and west sides of Chicago that's ignored, because the mayor could give the funding to whatever communities that he or she pleases. And that's what we see now. We don't see any favoritism anywhere but in certain communities. What we have to do is have a city that's going to be fair and equitable and make sure that every community has a school where kids could walk out of their doors and go to a high quality school with high quality teachers. I'm a teacher by profession. I live on the west side in Austin, and I used to teach at Bridge. Bridge is Harlem and Irving. Students from Austin had to get on the bus at 6 o'clock in the morning to go to Bridge, because Bridge, 3800 North England, had more resources. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not right. Every community should have the access to high quality education. And so it's unfair even to the young people in at Bridge that had to have kids come outside of their community, come in their school and use up their resources, fill up their classrooms, because we had to send people from the west side to the north side. So what did that do to the north side? It made their classes larger. We could have just simply made sure that children, students on the west side had access to a high quality education just like the north side.
Yeah, there's no question. Education needs to be addressed. I think ethics is also front and center. We heard the news today that Alderman Solis was wearing a wire, and that potentially there are issues in the city council right now with several aldermen being under federal scrutiny. And voters don't look at this and think, you know, things are running well there. And the next mayor is going to have to address that issue.
You know, I think that we have a slew of people that's connected to Alderman Burke, and we continue to hear Tony Pretwinkle having problems during this campaign, and it's disappointing that that she's constantly running commercials as if she's a saint, and that she's running commercials like she's honest. But every day we hear new things about how she's not the person that she's portraying in these million-dollar commercial ads.
Where would you be on this issue of public corruption? What would you want to see? Let's talk about the city council for a second, right? As if you were to become the mayor of Chicago, you'd be the executive of the... And some of these other mayoral candidates are saying that they'd like to see a smaller city council. Where are you on that?
Well, I mean, 15 is just ridiculous. I mean...
Is 50 ridiculous?
50, you know, 50 is not ridiculous if they're doing a job for the communities. If the 50 aldermen adds value to the city, then it's not ridiculous.
What do you think?
I think that I've often thought, and I've spoken with people about 25. But when you do 25, you have to make sure that every community is represented. Mm-hmm. So you cut down to 25. You look at a diverse city like this, who's going to lose out? That's what we have to make sure.
I mean, the way that's gerrymandered anyway. I mean, if you look at the ward map now in Chicago.
Right.
You know, coming up in this town, you would the ward map made some kind of at least geographic sense, right? It wasn't really based on as much on, I mean, there was always going to be racial dynamic in it, but it was always now you have for example, the second ward of the city of Chicago that cuts from the near South Side and the South Loop and the West Loop, and then somehow kicks back down one street, comes up north, comes east to encompass Water Tower Place and some pieces of Streeterville, and then kicks back out. And you're like, where is that?
See, and you're saying it right. We're going to have a 2020 census, and then you have a person like Daley just throwing out there that we should cut it to 15. Well,
he said 25, by the way, to us yesterday. So
no, I read 15.
Okay, well, he was just in here. So
he's flip flopping already.
I don't know. Wasn't that the number that he said yesterday?
I think that the headline was 15, but supposedly he wants to really.
Okay, so whatever that happens to be.
So you got a census. You got a map that you have to draw, and so if you change it and drop it to a number out after the map is drawn, there's going to be people left out. There's a such thing as one person, one vote, and you have to make sure that everyone has representation in the city.
And well, what will be interesting too is the Supreme Court's going to overlay this anyway, because the Supreme Court's going to be looking at gerrymandering as an issue, and then you might just have to have, you know, block wards that are based on geography that's all geographic and has nothing to do with the actual components within. So we'll see how the Supreme Court comes back on that. All right, what is your website, LaShawn?
FordForChicago.com. Thank you, Jeff.
FordForChicago.com.
That's easy to remember.
Right. Very, very good. Ford Motor Company called. They're on line 3. They're like, why didn't we think of that?
We want that one.
Yeah. All right, LaShawn, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, LaShawn.
Good luck out there. Takes me back to my childhood right there.
Yeah.
All right. I would like to tell you that we got a top 5 of 5 coming our way. And then I have some thoughts I would like to share.
Yes.
With people about Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to put them into a room.
In the corner, maybe, of the room.
And I would like to close the door and lock it. And I'm going to throw 2 bananas in the room so they can keep their blood sugar up.
What? I was like, I don't know where you're going there.
And then I'm going to, and then water, but no, a lot of water and maybe some caffeine and no access to a bathroom.
Oh, that's going to hurt. You might get an answer. You might get some kind of a, you know.
Right.
What if they end up falling in love while that private time together?
I love you.
Want some candy? Remember you offered Chuck and Nancy some candy right before
they would
meeting?
Be. Let me put it this way. They're a more appropriate couple than pretty much most of the ones we see in Washington right now.
And when you mentioned the fruit, all I kept thinking was the fruit basket in his hotel room.
Oh, God. Actually, you know what? How about this? This is even better. We put him in a room, one club sandwich between the two of them.
Club sandwich.
Yep. Remember, do you remember when, which was it, not Stormy, it was the other one that wanted the, that was asked, she goes to the hotel room and is like, I thought we were going to dinner. There's a club sandwich right there.
Oh, jeez. We're good. We got club sandwich.
You want to eat? There's a club sandwich. It's Karen McDougal. And she's in love with him. Yeah, that's a crazy thing.
She totally supports him.
Totally in love with him.
Playboy centerfold. She just, loves him.
Okay, I'm a bit of a vegan, but I guess bacon and turkey's fine.
I'll let this one slide. This one for you, Donnie. Don't worry about it. Give me all the bacon.
Fine. Oh, God. Oh, I love a woman who loves to pork.
You don't think you'd do the fast food route like the Clemson kids?
No, but that was it. I mean, there was like a half-eaten club sandwich. That's good enough for you. All right, take your clothes off.
Oh, gosh.
Basket for dessert.
Exactly. I don't know what's in it. I didn't open it. I don't eat anything delivered that I don't know. I had the club sandwich delivered four rooms over. All right. Do you mind if we move along?
It's all very childish.
Yes.
It's not far removed from reality the way you describe it.
But what I'm doing is I want to put those two in a room. I want to work it out, figure it out.
Yeah.
And Chuck can't even be a part of it anymore. No, I don't even want Chuck a part of it.
Right.
And his lady glasses that he wears when he's sitting there. It's like he literally is putting on his wife's body. You know that happens with couples, right? After a while, they only have one pair of glasses between the two of them for cheaters. And that's what's going on. And he's like, he's trying on, like, I don't know, somebody else's glasses all the time.
They don't seem to fit him.
Diane Feinstein, can I borrow your glasses? And the next thing you know, that's what's going on. All right. And Rudy, the nice thing about Rudy Giuliani is at least he doesn't wear the glasses anymore sideways on his head like he was wearing them.
Yeah.
He took those off. He's going solely with the crazy eye contact. I want it all ended. I want it all over. I want a redo. Are you ready now?
Let's go.
All right, here we go.
I think we got it.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, checking in at
number five.
Speaking of Nancy, here she is disinviting the president.
Because government is closed, we have said very clearly from the start, when I wrote to him the second time to say, since government is shut down, we do not, let's work together on a mutually agreeable date when we can welcome you to the Capitol to get rid of the State of the Union address. Government is still shut down. I still make the offer. Let's work on a mutually agreeable date, as the original date was mutually agreeable, so that we can welcome him properly.
That is the sound of her jaw moving, by the way, that clicking that you're hearing.
Didn't she initially say that it was about security, though? They couldn't guarantee security.
Yeah.
That's changed. But she makes the final call, so I guess she gets to do this, but I don't think this one feels right.
Everything that has happened here is like out of The Godfather. Everything. She's going, we can't guarantee your security for this meeting. Right? And then he's like, I'm afraid you're not going to be able to get on the airplane. And Michael Cohen, I wouldn't go up there and talk to the feds. Because look, we got your father-in-law back here visiting from Israel. Oh, or Ukraine, or wherever he's from.
Ukraine, I think.
I think he's from both. It's a crazy thing. It's a crazy thing. It's a crazy. Well, here's the the crazy train continues. Mm-hmm. Here's the president.
Here we go.
We think it's too bad, but I would say this: that the State of the Union speech has been canceled by Nancy Pelosi because she doesn't want to hear the truth. She doesn't want the American public to hear what's going on, and she's afraid of the truth. And the super left Democrats, the radical Democrats, what's going on in that party is shocking.
Well. In fairness, she didn't cancel the speech. She can do the speech anywhere he wants. canceled it at the.
But that's where it's done. I mean, she effectively canceled it. Like, he can do a rally, he can do something off-site, but it's not really the State of the Union.
He could do the State of the Union anywhere he wants. It still would be the State of the Union if he wants to do it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the traditional way of doing it. I happen to agree with that. I don't like the idea that she did that. She shouldn't have done it. But if he wants to call it the State of the Union and get all the coverage because he's going to read the State of the Union address, which is the document that they're submitting to Congress, that is the one thing that is constitutionally mandated, is a document be submitted that gives the president's State of the Union, then he could do it. He could do it at the Senate. He could do it in North Carolina if he wants to. He could do it at Mar-a-Lago on the 19th fairway. Whatever he does, even though there's only 18 fairways there. Actually, I think there's two.
There's a clubhouse courses. For sure.
There's 20, at least 27 holes there. Yeah. The 19th hole is what I was going to say, which is the bar generally, but he doesn't drink. But he could do it there too.
Doesn't seem like they're any closer together here, that or anything's getting done.
I know how to make them closer together.
Put them in a room.
Mm-hmm.
One banana and a club sandwich.
There were two. Where'd the other one go?
No, I like the idea here of one banana. I'm going with this because then they have to figure out how to share the banana. It means something totally different to him than it used to. All right, checking in at
number four.
Student at the center of the controversy here, the young man, Nick Sandman. I keep calling him Mark, but it's really, I don't know. This,
is
Mr.
that
Sandman,
the worst that's been said about him?
Yes, that is true. Was on the Today Show this morning. They actually aired the thing. We saw a little bit of it yesterday. And he talks about his encounter with Native American elder Nathan Phillips.
As far as standing there, I had every right to do so. My position is that I was not disrespectful to Mr. Phillips. I respect him. I'd like to talk to him. I mean, in hindsight, I wish we could have walked away and avoided the whole thing. But I can't say that I'm sorry for listening to him and standing there.
Yeah. Well, he seemed very coached, but that's what you'd expect, I suppose. He's a kid.
Right, but I think that was the argument that a lot of supporters were making from the very beginning. He didn't have he didn't have to move. I mean, that's part of the American thing, and he wants to wear the hat. I mean,
right.
Again, he's a kid, so it's a little different, right? As a high school student, as opposed to like a somebody over the age of 18 that is that really those are the people with the rights. As the adults are the ones with the rights, but he is the. It's a good learning moment, I suppose, if he wants to stand there. And, I think you might see this kid get more involved in public policy because he's become a darling of the MAGA movement. And you might end up seeing him get paid $30,000 a speech before it's all said and done.
And it'll, be a teaching lesson for hopefully everybody involved. But, I mean, the Nathan Phillips guy, the fact that he is a Vietnam War veteran, the Washington Post has now retracted that. Said that he did not serve.
Did not serve in Vietnam or during the era?
Did not serve in Vietnam, and it just seems as if a lot of stories have changed since this first narrative came out, and that's just the latest development.
All right, TMZ caught up with Nathan Phillips.
Like you said, can't really see into the man's heart, the young man's heart. But in a sense of true reconciliation, I think that we need to have some kind of dialogue. But I think the dialogue shouldn't be between him and myself, but between the indigenous people and the Catholic diocese, Pope Francis, and perhaps if the Vatican were to host a gathering, I'd be willing to go.
All right.
Yeah.
I see. Now you went a little too far there.
There are no heroes there.
Yeah. Yeah. If we could go to Italy, I guess we could work this out. I think Trump should hold like a beer summit. Remember when Obama did that? When they had the guy that the professor, right, and the police officer and the whole thing? That would be, maybe you could do that.
Sure. How about a fast food summit?
And perhaps the president could regale Nathan Phillips with his thoughts about Pocahontas while he's there.
Oh, gee.
Like he did last time.
Dear.
He had Native Americans at the White House.
Mm.
Oh, it's something. Yeah, there are the actually. I think that what you have here is a picture that everybody wants to apply their own already existent opinions to, and have that just reflected in what they're looking at. There.
It's certainly happening.
Yeah. And so, and these two just end up in this moment right here. And he is a kid at the end of the day. So just remember that. Top 5 at 5 continues. We've worked our way to
number 3.
Okay, so after a tweet from the president implied that he was doing away with the official White House press briefings because Press Secretary Sarah Sanders is covered, quote, rudely and inaccurately by the fake news, she appeared on Fox and Friends to defend the new policy amidst criticism from the White House Correspondents Association that, hey, talk about we've been doing this forever. What about this?
Look, I take questions from reporters every single day. The idea that this White House isn't accessible to the press is absolutely laughable. I've done over 100 briefings, answered thousands of questions from members of the press. Look, we're in the business of getting information to the American people, not making stars out of people that want to become contributors on CNN. And that's a lot of times what we see take place in the briefing room. We're more than happy to take questions, but we think that there should be a certain level of decorum and a certain level of honesty and responsibility that comes with that.
Yeah. You got to have the press briefing. Come on.
Yes. Yes, they do. I mean, again, this just goes down to, I mean, they've been doing the press briefing since the television age, essentially. There's a press person that gets out there. And if you, and the problem is not that the press coverage is unfair. The problem is that when you get up at the podium, you have to answer for what the president just said or did, and she's afraid to do it because it'll make him bad if she goes, well, yeah, maybe you shouldn't have done that. Because you have to defend, in some cases, things that are embarrassing to defend.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the truth. And that's not even, we're not even talking about policy. Sometimes it's just behavior. It's things that he's chosen to do. And really, this comes down to the president not wanting to have anybody else speak for him other than himself. He wants to be the purveyor of all pleasure and pain from the White House.
Yeah. I mean, you may not like what the press, the way they act all the time, or the way what they print or discuss or talk about on cable news, but you have to have access. And she's saying that people should hear from the president himself, which I think has been effective when he gets out there and just he does answer a lot of questions.
Oh, sure.
I mean, you know, you have a lot of access, but it isn't every day. Those are infrequent. And the press briefing is a very different animal.
And the press briefing is going to be, there are a lot of questions that are going to be about all the Mueller stuff that comes out every day. Right.
That's true.
And so they're going to have to answer, hey, did the president talk to Michael Cohen about when did the one question that they don't want to answer right now is when did the president stop talking to Michael Cohen about the Trump Tower Moscow?
She refers all of those to outside counsel. She doesn't handle any of those.
All right. But that's a question that's going to come up over and over and over again.
For sure.
Was the president, when he was talking about Vladimir Putin yesterday, was he thinking about the Trump Tower Moscow?
Will he get in a room with Nancy Pelosi with two bananas and a sandwich?
Right.
What was the sandwich?
One banana and a club sandwich.
One banana.
Right. And a lot of pee-pee-inducing drinks and no access to a bathroom. That is my plan. Checking in at
number 2.
This is not your father's Super Bowl commercial.
My boyfriend is addicted to frozen food porn. He watches it at least 2 to 3 times a day. Maybe more. The other day, I found his hidden stash. His addiction has turned him into a 3-minute man. I tried to spice things up, but it didn't really work. He's doing it as much at work as he is at home. Now we are into amateur food videos.
It's so hot.
This addiction can happen to anyone. It's hard to resist.
Mm-hmm.
I totally get it.
Yep. What are they talking about there?
They're talking about the Devour brand, the new Kraft Devour brand.
Like microwavable dishes and dinners.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's what they're talking about.
Yeah. Not your father's Super Bowl commercial,
no.
But will appear on the Super Bowl broadcast or adjacent thereof.
Maybe a few kiddos there who too. Have some questions on that one.
Yeah, just letting you know. Checking in at...
Number one.
Okay. If you think I am totally wet, totally a moron, totally a nut when it comes to what's going on in Washington, and you think I'm, you know, that Donald Trump is the absolute perfect best president of all times,
mm-hmm.
why then is Anthony Scaramucci, his hand-chosen guy to run the press office for at least an hour, on Celebrity Big Brother?
Aren't they draining the swamp, though?
Well, I think the swamp may not have a drain.
An undrainable swamp? There's not going to be some... Is there going to be a big crash, or are we talking about kind of a... Is it fairly...
I don't think so, no. I think the strength economy is very good. So the government is actually holding things back and making it worse on people, you know. We shut down the government, or you have this kind of like...
I wonder if it's still shut down.
Oh, yeah, right. I don't even know what's going on.
Right,
but like you have this acrimony between the parties.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get anything done.
Let me ask you another question.
Mm-hmm.
Why is Tom Green asking questions like he's George Stephanopoulos
is that who that is?
Anthony Scaramucci? And why does public policy and the truth behind all the craziness going on in Washington have to come out on Celebrity Big Brother? Hosted by Les Moonves' wife.
Who goes by Julie Chen Moonves now.
Right.
In the wake of her husband leaving the network.
Right. But being forced out of the network. For his pee-pee indiscretions. What has happened to my United States of America? And I cannot blame Vladimir Putin for Julie Chen and Les Moonves. Although I would like to. I must now leave you because I have to stick my head in a microwave.
The top five at five.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Okay.
President started the day by saying, I'm going to give the speech, the State of the Union speech in the House. Nancy Pelosi says, nope. Okay, then I'm not going to give the speech in the House. And that's where things sit.
Philip Bump is with the Washington Post. Does Anna have that right? Is that exactly what happened, Philip?
Yeah. it's certainly the abridged version of it, but mm-hmm. yes. I mean,
saw one of your colleagues tweet that out earlier.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Right. President Trump was responding to a letter that the Speaker had sent about a week ago, saying, you know, let's put this off until after the shutdown is done. And he said, no, I want to do it on the 29th. And she basically responded and said, well, you're not going to, because I'm not going to let you do that. And she, by law, actually controls who gets to speak from the floor of the House. And if she doesn't put forward a motion to allow him to do that, he can't do it.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
What in the hell is going on in my country? When is this ever going to end? I mean, this is a ridiculous thing. First of all, where does this go from here? Do we have a sense of that?
Well, I mean, the original motivation for Pelosi, I think it's important to remember, was that she was trying to get Donald Trump to cave on the shutdown. This was just sort of a chip that she was playing, and now it's become sort of center stage because it is easy for people to sort of grasp what that fight is about in a way that it may not be for the shutdown. So she was essentially trying to say, hey, you know what, let's get the shutdown done sooner rather than later so that you can go ahead and do the State of the Union as you had originally planned, and then that it became this whole separate fight, right. In part because he then responded by saying, well, you can't fly to Europe and so on and so forth. So what is going on broadly is that this shutdown fight is the main attraction, but more broadly than that even is the fact that this is for the first time Donald Trump is facing a Congress, which is indeed a co-equal branch of government, which is hostile to him. He didn't have that for the first 2 years of his presidency. Now he has it, and, you know, in addition to not really knowing what to do in Congress in the first place, having a half of it be hostile towards him, I think puts him in a very weird place.
I'd like to quote the president and say, many people don't know that it's a co-equal branch of government. I think he's learning. It's kind of learning on the job. I get all that, but he's not the first president to deal with a hostile Congress, Right? I mean, that's, there have been plenty of presidents who've dealt with either a full hostile Congress, as Barack Obama did. Not a whole lot got done there. But and divided government sometimes can be, you know, good for the economy. In this particular case, it's bad for the economy and certainly bad for everybody's ego here, because that's what it really feels like we're fighting about. And I don't know that it's worth... I mean, listen, it's not even for me to say. This is my own opinion about, you know, where we are in the country, but it doesn't make any sense. I can't see, as the president's approval numbers, I mean, that was that's a big headline, too, that obviously they're trying to change the headlines today, but the headline today is that a series of polls came out. It showed that he's closing in on a 60% disapproval rating. Those polls are anywhere from 57% to 59%. The major polls in terms of disapproval. That is a really hard number, and he's down about 7-8% with his core support. That's a big number for him.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the shutdown has been pretty much an unalloyed negative for him, with the exception that, you know, the media that he consumes is Fox News, and Fox News continues to argue that he's doing the right thing and he needs to stick to his guns. And the base that he hears from the most, I think, probably is generally cheering what he's doing. But, you know, to go back to the question you asked about, yes, it certainly is the case that past presidents have had to deal with hostile Congresses, but those past presidents did not have two things that Donald Trump does. The first is that sense of ego which drove him to this. I mean, obviously all presidents have ego, but Donald Trump's, I think, is of a different nature, and I think that's part of why his voters found him appealing, but I think it's not serving him well at this point in time. But the second thing is he has literally no experience with this. And I hearken back to Iowa in 2015 when he came to the Iowa State Fair, and I was there, and I asked him a question. I said, how are you going to deal with Congress? And he waved it off, and he said, you know what, the same way I deal with the zoning board in the city of New York, which is, of course, a ludicrous thing to say, but at the time, no one actually thought he was going to be president, so it was just kind of like, oh, here's Trump saying another thing. Mm-hmm. Right? But he has no idea how to deal with Congress. He never had to deal with Congress. He doesn't know how to build coalitions. He doesn't know how to convince people to come around to his side of thinking on things. And, you know, that shows. And it's even worse now because he has a Congress that is actively seeking to keep him from getting anything done.
But so I guess the question is, who blinks first? And there was that poll that came out, I believe, today about how 71% of people say that it's not worth shutting down government over the wall. And do you think that starts to eat away at some of the Republicans, or do you think it goes the other way, where they, you know, maybe some moderate Democrats jump on board with some more funding for the wall?
It already is starting to eat away at the Republicans. There's a poll out this morning from CBS News which showed that Republicans, about a fifth of Republicans, already think that this thing should be resolved without any wall funding. Something like 45% of Republicans said this was not a fight they should have gotten into in the first place. There was a poll that just came out about 5 o'clock from the Associated Press in which while Democrats are 8-1 more likely to blame Trump than Democrats in Congress say that they bear a great deal of blame for the shutdown. Republicans, though, only 2-1 are likely to blame Democrats over Trump. So a lot of Republicans actually are holding Trump responsible for the shutdown, and the shutdown keeps getting worse. If this thing goes past February 1st, if it goes past, God forbid, March 1st, there's going to be really, really serious ramifications, including not being paying food stamps, people not getting tax returns, or tax refunds, having to shut down the federal judiciary. There's going to be a lot of things which happen very quickly and very short order, which make things pretty dire and will probably force a resolution.
Can I ask you another question, Philip Bump, for the Washington Post, since we have you on the phone? Can I just one more question? This is Michael Cohen. You're familiar with him? He was the lawyer for Donald Trump, right? And he was
rings a bell, yes.
Yeah, and he's been convicted of lying to the feds, specifically about whether or not he knew about the Moscow Trump Tower and all of that. Now, he was supposed to go up to Capitol Hill and testify in front of the House Oversight Committee on February 7th, and he was going to answer questions. And now all of a sudden, he gets a bug in his ear because the president and Rudy Giuliani have both intimated that maybe there'll be questions about his father-in-law, who was a Ukrainian, may have been the guy that kind of introduced. Again, an interesting issue about his father-in-law and his relationship to New York. And the taxicab industry there, the taxicab industry here in Chicago, as a matter of fact, too. He got named in something that went on here. And this guy's got a little bit of trouble, and now all of a sudden, Michael Cohen thinks that they might be, just like in The Godfather, right, when they brought in Sam Pantangeles. The guy from Italy, who's that man in the back of the courtroom?
Right.
I mean, come on, I mean, let's
this is exactly what's going on here, and now he's not going to testify, which, by the way, I didn't think that this was optional for him.
I think it was actually optional. I don't think he was subpoenaed. I think they asked him to come, and he said that he would.
I mean, they can subpoena him.
Right. Yes, I mean, I'm not really sold. I mean, Michael Cohen, yes, he has provided a lot of information and that certainly has moved forward various investigations in Donald Trump. He is not necessarily the most inherently trustworthy person.
And no.
I'm not sure I take at face value his assertion that it was because he was worried about these threats, which aren't new. I mean, Donald Trump's been talking about his father-in-law for quite some time.
Right.
I'm not sure why he's not coming. I'm sure he will end up testifying at some point in time. But it's worth remembering, he wasn't going to talk about Mueller anyway. He had already said, because the Mueller investigation's ongoing, he wasn't going to talk about any of the Russia stuff. So, you know, that sort of sections off as, you know, one of the things that people are really wanting to hear about, he wasn't going to talk about anyway, if that, you know, helps anyone feel better about it.
Wasn't Cohn, though, as the fixer, also kind of known to issue a few threats of his own, allegedly, against a lot of different people, maybe at the behest of the president and others? I mean, it seems as if there's a little bit there that doesn't, it just doesn't feel right. You have Congressman Schiff saying that they're going to enhance the security measures, but they still expect Cohen to testify. So it sounds like they still want him, and they can force
him. That's what he means by a threat. The threat is the Republicans are going to get up and they carry the water for the Trump administration and ask questions about the father-in-law. And let me just say this, that as much as people want to make that, it's easy. It's funny how short our memory is. It's a blizzard of data. So we get turned around very quickly on this, that now all of a sudden Michael Cohen is some sort of lefty Democratic operative that, you know, depending on, you know, what news source you're watching here, you know, who clearly, you know, is part of this gigantic Democratic cabal. An hour ago, he was the fixer for the president of the United States.
Right.
You cannot have it both ways.
You can't.
Right. Well, I mean, Michael Cohen is someone whose loyalty lies with whoever he feels an umbrella of protection from. Right. I mean, I don't think I'm giving away any secrets when I say that. And now he has found that spotlight and enjoys the spotlight of praise and accolades from the left for turning on Trump. You know, he re-registered as a Democrat, and now he tweets about how Trump is terrible all the time and so on and so forth. But you're right, you know, it really was like flipping a switch off. And, you know, people should apply many, many grains of salt to the various things that Michael Cohen says and does.
Yes.
Very true.
Philip, well said. Better said than any way I could have said it, because I've lost my mind. I don't even know where to begin anymore on any of this. It's so insane. All right, thank you, sir. We will continue to read you in the Washington Post.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you, Philip Pump. Con Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Would you like to enter a really cool contest? You can. Listen to this. MB Financial Bank wants to send you and a guest to a Blackhawks game, but not just any Blackhawks game and not just any kind of experience when you get there. Your package will include a tour of the United Center, a ride on the ice during intermission, and two tickets to the game on February 14th when the Hawks face the Devils. Enter for your chance to win at WGNRadio.com/contest. Bank on the Blackhawks, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
Very cool.
All right.
Awesome.
All right. Okay. Coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. This is a few minutes away, and I don't know what else to do here. Now, you know, we were talking about this Michael Cohen before.
Yeah.
The Michael Cohen was supposed to go up to Capitol Hill and testificate in front of the House Oversight Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Illinois has a delegate on the House Oversight Committee, and he's going to join us coming up
after
6 o'clock to talk about whether or not Michael Cohen can get out of this
or that they'll compel him to do so. It's pretty interesting that how this developed. Can you just say, no, I'm not going to do it, or I'll do it at a later date when he's likely going to be in prison at a later date?
Yes, doesn't he go away?
Yes, he goes
in
away.
March?
Yes, very soon. So a few weeks from now, he's kind of busy. It's harder to get access to him.
I believe he's going to be busy from 36 to 42 months, I think
how
busy he's going to be. I don't remember the exact number there, but I think I'm in the ballpark.
Yeah. So Congressman Schiff has issued a statement to him saying that we understand his concerns about the threats to your father-in-law or the things that the president has been saying and Rudy Giuliani's been saying, but not appearing before Congress is not an option.
The nice thing about going to prison is Michael Cohen will not have to decide which gaudy, ill-fitting sports jacket he's going to put on to smoke a cigar somewhere. It's the same clothes every day. You just, you know, you put it over your head, you put an undershirt on, and then that thing over your head and some soft pants on, and next thing you know, you're walking around and you're mopping the floor and going to the day room and fighting over the remote control of the TV.
Yeah, outfit picking is not a big issue.
Not a big deal.
No,
not
you don't have to put too much thought to that at all.
So,
but so he may be compelled to testify before he goes to prison, is the way it's sounding. Yep. But we will ask our guest more about that.
Yeah. Yes, the mystery guest.
The mystery guest, the one we're not mentioning. Can we say his name?
It's called a tease, Anna.
All right. Okay,
I'm going to tease. He is the Illinois delegate to this House committee.
It's a lot of clues.
Yes. I guess you'd look it up on the internet, but I'm just letting you know. We'll find out who
Classic
he is.
Classic radio tease.
He's like the mystery guest. He's the mystery congressman who's going to join us.
Got it. We'll have a lot to ask him.
Yeah. And then I have other thoughts to share with you, because I'm just bewildered by my state of affairs. By the state of affairs in the state of the United States that I live in, and plus the United States. Does that make any sense?
It does, with everything going on, and even the news today, digesting that.
I don't understand.
What's going on with our own city. What's going on in
Washington. This other stuff planned for today. And then I'm
wiped clean.
Like at 2 o'clock this afternoon, I'm looking at the TVs in our office, and I see this stuff happening. I'm like, what? What?
Feels like we have a lot of days like that.
I want to go back to the United States that I remember. And I don't know if that's ever going to happen again. I worry about that a little
bit. Doesn't feel good.
No. No, it doesn't. Yeah, it's a Rokan show with Anna DeVlantis. And yes, it's right here on 720 WGN, and there's nothing we can do about it. Now, here is, we were just talking about our mystery congressman is going to join us, who is on the House Oversight Committee. And what does this all mean if Michael Cohen says he doesn't want to go up because he's afraid that they're going to ask him questions about his father-in-law? What is going on in America?
What's happening?
Raja Krishnamurthy is with us. He is the mystery congressman from Illinois who is on the House Oversight Committee. And what now? Okay, did you guys get a memo? How did you find out about it today? That your February 7th, big nationally televised event was off.
Hey, Ro and Anna. Great to talk to you again. I found out about it just from my staff, and I guess two things jumped out at me. One. He apparently said that there were certain threats made against him and his family, specifically his father-in-law. And then the second thing that jumped out at me is that, basically he is going to end up testifying before the House Oversight Committee. And I think that he will end up voluntarily doing so because obviously the committee has subpoena power too.
Okay, but what does that mean? I mean, is it not going to be February 7th? Is it going to be February 7th? Because, he's going to go to the slam, as we like to say in this town, in March. So he's got a good, this is, tick-tock.
Yeah, March 6th is coming up. I don't know if it's going to be February 7th. I do think that it's going to happen. But I think the one thing that I heard is that, these particular threats about his father-in-law and his wife's family, are pretty disconcerting. I think the president, it's no secret. He's been, basically belittling him, calling him names, demonizing him for weeks. And, I think that that type of intimidation tactic is wrong. In any case, I think the committee is going to work with him to assure their safety and get him to testify.
But are the threats actually, are you aware that the threats are actually threats against their safety? Or is it the threat that Republicans are going to ask questions about the business dealings that his father-in-law were involved in, some of which have been alleged to be criminal?
Yeah, so I think that the...
the threats in terms of their specificity hasn't been disclosed. All I know is the stuff that Donald Trump has been saying about his father-in-law and how he's going to do something to do something about his father-in-law. I don't know what has been communicated privately or otherwise. So that's just something that I think the committee is going to work out with him.
What will or would you focus on with Michael Cohen? We've heard reporting that the Russia Mueller stuff is off limits. You wouldn't be able to ask questions about that. Is that correct? And what else are you trying to get into here?
Yeah, so, as you know, he's kind of at the nexus of the president's personal affairs, his business dealings, and his campaign organization. And so there's so many topics, everything from campaign finance violations to the president's personal finances and entanglements. I think that there's going to be no shortage of topics. From my standpoint, really it's about how do we make sure that as an oversight committee, we put in place rules and regulations and laws to prevent any illegality going forward.
In terms of illegality, what do you mean?
Well,
be more specific.
Well, obviously Mr. Cohen is best known for the campaign finance violations, the hush money payments made to a couple individuals to prevent them from disclosing affairs with Donald Trump during the campaign. And those sums that were paid were in violation of campaign finance laws. Regardless of whatever else you think about those whole proceedings, the campaign finance violations were fairly serious, and it just goes to a whole other discussion that maybe we can have now or some other time about our campaign finance laws. But there's some loopholes, and they drove trucks through them, and they also violated other laws.
Yeah, what other laws did they violate?
Well, the biggest a couple things. One, you may know this, your listeners may know this, but there are certain limits on what an individual can actually give to a political campaign. In the general election, it's $2,700, and apparently sums as great as $100,000, six-figure sums, were paid to these individuals, Stormy Daniels and the other person, in violation of that limit. In addition, corporations are not allowed to make donations to individuals, and they basically engineered a scheme where a publishing company, made a very large payment, again, to stop an individual from going public with her allegations.
Right. Well, I mean, okay, so in terms of all of that, which has kind of been in the wash here, there it doesn't seem like if people want to accuse the president of something that is an impeachable act, I think that's going to be a little bit of a stretch to say campaign finance violations are going to lead to the overturning of a duly elected president. I think that's going to be a tough sell certainly the House could impeach him right now, probably. You have the votes to do it. But the question is, in the trial, the Senate, is that going to be enough to find him guilty and throw him out? I think that's probably a political issue, not a legal issue.
That's exactly right. I think your listeners and you probably already know this, but in the House you need a majority, but in the Senate you need 2/3 of the Senate. So that's about 67 senators. And so you're absolutely right. This is not just a legal judgment. It is a political judgment, and it has to be something that's done through consensus, in my humble opinion. It has to be something that's arrived at not just by one party or members of one party, but both parties. I think the other issue which will probably come up, I'm not sure, but the president's personal finances and where, for instance, he was receiving money, whether it was from foreigners, having nothing to do with Russia, by the way, necessarily, but there are properties right now which the president owns may be frequented by foreign entities, and we don't know whether that money is ending up with Donald Trump in violation of the Emoluments Clause.
Yeah, but so is that something Michael Cohen issues. Would know the answer to, do you think?
Possibly. I mean, he's just he's one of those key individuals, those people that, you know, had a hand in everything. He was the president's fixer, so to speak.
The Speaker Pelosi's decision to say no to the State of the Union, not you're not invited, not authorizing the speech until the federal government reopens, is that the right call? Do you think that she made the right decision there?
Well, the one thing I can say is business as usual just won't fly right now. I think her decision seems reasonable in the context of, you know, 800,000 workers being unpaid and just millions just not getting the services that they want. I think postponing the speech, it's not canceling it, but postponing it for another time when the government's actually open and doing its job, it seems appropriate to me.
You know, it's going to, I don't think anybody comes out of that one looking good. You know, I mean, the president's done enough damage to himself in a lot of ways. You see it in his poll numbers and all that, but with this shutdown. But I think Democrats trying to play the Trumpian game here just doesn't. I think with the American people, if Democrats want to be successful in 2020, both in Congress, in the Senate, and at the presidential level, I don't think getting down and playing the game that he plays with him is going to be effective. I think Americans want they want reasonable solutions to these things right now because there's so much has already been broken down for us.
I know.
And a functional government.
I agree 100%. And we can't get into a situation where we're trying to out Trump. Mm-hmm. I think the American people hired us to be a majority in the House of Representatives for two reasons. One, to act as a check and balance, and to conduct oversight, but also to try to get something done. And so I'm on the oversight committee. We talked about the Michael Cohen stuff, but I'm also going to be the chairman of the subcommittee that's in part in charge of health care issues and student loan issues. And so I'm hoping that we can find some consensus, for instance, with regard to prescription drug prices, which are just, you know, they're skyrocketing. Everybody knows that, your listeners, and you know that. And I think Republicans have an appetite for doing something on that, so I'd like to work with them. The other issue I was just going to bring up is I just got appointed to the House Intelligence Committee a few days ago. And so there, you know, today I went down for my first homework assignment, so to speak. You go into the what's called the secure compartmentalized underground bunker, the skiff. Yeah, the skiff under the Capitol. And, oh, my God, the stuff that they gave me to read and to review, it just puts everything in perspective. I mean, our foreign adversaries are out there. They are gunning for us, literally and figuratively, and we've got to get our house in order. We've got to come together as a country and deal with our domestic issues reasonably, and then we got to present a united front with regard to those other, the bad guys. And we're not doing that right now, and that bothers me.
Mm-hmm. Do you consider, without telling us, obviously, anything you can't tell us, but do you consider Russia to be one of those adversaries?
That is... I absolutely think Russia is one of our adversaries.
Okay.
They are on every front. They're trying to surround us. They're trying to weaken our alliances. They meddled in our democracy. They're doing it right now. They run programs that even now, you know, we have to be very careful of in our social media feeds. And so, yes, that is an adversary we have to unite against.
And what about China?
Yes, absolutely. China, on one thing, the president is correct. The Chinese have been stealing our intellectual property. They've been dumping goods into our markets to drive down our prices and basically kill off American industry. And then on top of that, they're pursuing a very combative, militaristic policy with regard to the Southeast China Sea and Taiwan and so forth. So we have to be vigilant. And by the way, the Iranians and the North Koreans are to be monitored very closely as well. I mean, we have a range of threats. We can't you know, we're messing around over here with a wall.
Raja, did you freak out after you read this stuff?
Were you like on a scale from 1 to 10?
Yes,
panic.
At what point was it, how severe was the freak out?
It wasn't freak out, but it was more like sobering. Like, wait, we were just talking about the wall, you know, 10 minutes ago, and here I'm reading this. I'm like, why are we talking about this dumb wall? Let's come together. Let's get a bipartisan solution to tighten our borders. Let's have fact-based reasons for doing what we're doing, and then let's move forward. Let's get on with it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Well, that is well said. How about Andorra or the Principality of Monaco? Are we worried about them? Any?
I can't comment on that.
All right. Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Just throwing it out there.
Thanks.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
Thanks, Congressman.
Thanks, guys.
Raja Krishnamurti. He is a congressman. All right. Hey, the new polling is out on the mayor's race.
Oh, we'll have to take a look at that.
And Anne Hathaway says she doesn't want to drink for 18 years until her daughter gets old enough to. Because she's a new mom.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how wrong she is.
She'll probably drink more.
Oh, I refuse. I need to be fully present for my child. Really?
Is that what she said the reason was?
Yeah. She needed to be fully present. Really, when that kid is two and screaming in your ear constantly and then running around and tearing things from the very tippity top of the wingspan of the child, tearing things down and breaking them on the floor, you're going to want to drink, my friend. You're going to want to drink.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Saints fans are not letting up. You've got a congressman out of Louisiana saying he's spoken to colleagues on the Judiciary Antitrust Subcommittee, and he wants to haul Roger Goodell before the committee to answer about that blown Saints call.
Oh, my God. Why not? Commissioner Goodell, if that is your real name. Really?
That's what's happening in Washington. Something's getting done, Ro.
As Raja Krishnamurti just told us
a few
minutes ago, who went down. He's now on the House Intel Committee.
Yep.
And he went down to the SCIF and he read the threat matrix report.
Sure.
That is issued every day to the White House, which I don't know that the president is reading it, but anyway, it's a threat matrix report about all the things that are going on. Of all the things, the one blown call in the NFC Championship. I agree, it sucks. And they you know what, civilly, I think that the Rams should be forced to play again against New Orleans. I think they should do that.
But should Congress really be worried about this right now?
No. I do nothing. I wish not to make a federal case out of this.
If they could do something like Cody Parkey off the Bears, I'm all for
that.
Yeah,
top of the list. Priority.
I would like Cody Parkey deported. And I don't know. I'd like him handed over
to the
ICE
president.
And sent. I don't know where the
make him build the wall and then deport him.
Yes, I think he should be deported to Guatemala. Hey, wait a second.
What you get?
I think he's going to stand out there, too.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know.
So that's happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is happening.
Progress.
Mm-hmm. Rokan Show with Anna DeFlancis right here on 720 WGN. All right, Anne Hathaway. She's an actress.
Yes.
She's in a new movie with Matthew McConaughey. And I hope that this movie is easier to understand than the Lincoln commercials that Matthew McConaughey stars in. The new one where he's playing pool by himself. He's got a trick shot. And it's like, she was just looking at me.
But
and
then
I had to navigate a shot. And you're like, what is he doing?
I don't know.
Someone looking at him? Why is he always alone in his Lincoln? Why isn't there anybody else with him? Why is he so damn creepy? What's going on?
Why do we have to hear his inner monologue?
And in the inner monologue, it always sounds like he's just about to take his own life.
Can get very dark. Feels like it.
I'm not sure what I'm thinking right now, except that the ball's going around another ball, and I got to get the car out the driveway. Is it a car? Is it an SUV? Does she like me? Is life worth living?
Oh, God. gosh. Oh, gee.
My salad or stripes.
I just hit that ball. I think I just scratched, actually. I don't think this is going to make a lot of sense in a car commercial, but I'm doing it anyway.
Hey, we'll use it. Sounds good.
And this is trick photography that makes the ball go around like that anyway, so who the hell is going to believe it? This sure is a nice house. Is it my house? Is it somebody else's house? Why is there an echo in my own head?
I don't get any of it. Anyway, Anne Hathaway is in a new movie with him. That's the point.
Yes.
And she sat down with Ellen DeGeneres and said this.
And so I was just kind of like stumbling in one eye open, and I was trying to convince him about certain things about my character. And I, at the end of it, I said, listen, I've got a confession. I was hungover the entire time. And he just goes, oh, really? I couldn't tell. And then 2 days later, we had another meeting, and I showed up. He said, oh, now I can.
Yeah. The difference between the other meeting. And then you quit drinking after that, right?
I did. I quit drinking back in October.
Like forever?
For 18 years.
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna stop drinking while my son's living in my house, just because I don't totally love the way I do it, and he's getting to an age where he really does need me all the time in the mornings.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, another reason I don't want kids. So, true.
Okay, so is she saying that she's a bad drunk and therefore she doesn't want to drink around the kid, or that he just totally needs me and I'm not going to drink? Because when was her baby born?
I think the baby's 2.
Oh.
So she's got 16 years technically, but I don't think it.
Did she say, I don't like the way I do it? I mean, what is she doing? Chugging a bottle of wine every time?
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe she doesn't like the way she drinks.
She said she went out with Matthew McConaughey and his wife, and that she couldn't keep up with everybody. And so she was the one who showed up to all the meetings looking and sounding and feeling really hungover, and no one else did.
I had no idea I had a wife. She's not in any of these commercials, and I don't know, but I have a car, or is it a truck? Why do I have a pool table? Is that my pool table or my infinity pond? Where's the vodka?
Where is the... Well, I don't understand anything that is going on here. First of all, let me just explain something to you. Kids, too. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you something about 2-year-olds. Anna can tell you something about 2-year-olds.
It's very recent memory, actually.
Yeah. If a 2-year-old doesn't drive you to drink, nothing will.
I know. Terrible twos, they call it that for a reason. Yeah. Although sometimes it stretches into the 3s.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it stretches into the teen years. I mean, it can be something.
Well, they say the age of reason is 7. But I would say there are a lot of unreasonable points even at 7. However, before that, there isn't a lot of reasoning going on. It's like threatened.
I would say,
I will give you the M&Ms if you eat your food.
Now, I don't. I've only raised a girl, so I don't know how the. I don't know the difference here with girls and boys. But I could say this: that's true about the age of reason being 7. 6, 7, they turn into these adorable, great companions to the adults.
True.
And they're amazing.
It is a sweet age.
And then at 12, they turn into the spawn of Satan. And that lasts...
I hate you.
Officially.
You don't know anything.
Officially until they're somewhere between 16 and 18. It starts to mellow. It's sort of like they wake up. It's almost a hangover.
When are you going to trust me?
What is that?
It's David Jennings. And, oh, my God. Don't creep me out.
That's creepy.
I got enough trouble.
You don't understand.
No, I do understand. I'll handle this. So at 15, it starts to pull out. 16, and you know, this is a trick. At 16, if you can afford to buy the child a car, mm-hmm. dangle it over their head. Oh. Don't buy it necessarily, but dangle it over their head and dangle their own freedom. And what I do not need is this to continue past 16 is the kind of the conversation you need to have with them. Because at 12, you get it. You're told, you're warned. You're forewarned. It comes on the label. The baby is born, and when it's a girl, there's a label on the back that says, at 12, I will turn on you.
You kind of know that going in. It is sort of part of the contract.
So back to Anne Hathaway. Start drinking now. I don't know. I mean, this is the time to do that.
They call it mommy juice for a reason.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I just kids, you know, they can drive you nuts, and then they're the most beautiful things in the world. It's just, it sounds to me as if this is, doesn't have as much to do with their kids as much as just saying no to the alcohol at a certain point, right? Like she was trying to keep up with people like Matthew McConaughey, and I'd imagine he does pretty well.
That's clear. If you want to not drink, that's one thing. Don't say, and that's good. And that's if you want to, you know, however you want to handle that, you want to, that's a personal choice. That's
sure.
a medical choice. That's
absolutely.
Sometimes you just got to do it. Sometimes it's a court order choice. Whatever it is, it's a choice, and you get to do it any way you want to handle it. But don't say I'm coming back in 18 years because it's all going to be over then, because it's not.
Oh,
it's not.
Does it get worse?
Well, it doesn't get better. I mean, this is not, it's going to start right now, and it's going to get wacky. Then it's going to be nice and very sweet and lovely, and then it's going to get wacky again.
It gets wacky after 18 or at 18, would you say?
It can. Yeah. Then there's the bills. If you send the kids to college, look out.
Oh, yeah. Then you're working for them.
So I have a friend who's sending his daughter to college, and he's looking at a series of schools, and including my alma mater. And my little Division III liberal arts college.
Go Big Red.
In Ohio.
Yeah.
Is now $67,000 a year to go to.
It's unbelievable.
My parents still complain about the $8,000 that they had to pay when I was there.
Yeah, and even state schools, which used to be much more reasonable, have seemingly caught up to this crazy number.
That's an amazing number.
It really is. And it speaks to, you know, like how...
So if you're not drinking that... I mean, Anne Hathaway's probably going to be able to afford it, but you never know. I mean, this could be the end of her career. You never know.
She's very talented.
Yeah, I mean, maybe being in a movie with Matthew McConaughey talking about his balls. I don't know. It'll be something.
I don't know if she's being totally... I think she's being a bit facetious there. I don't think she's really promising not to drink. I don't think that's...
I mean, I woke up on a Saturday morning before saying, I'm never drinking again.
Oh, my God.
That's more like what it was.
I woke up last Saturday morning saying that.
And then you had brunch with, like, Bloody Marys two hours later.
Because she's not addicted. She's not saying she's addicted. She's just saying she can't handle her alcohol as well as it seems like a lot of her colleagues.
Fine.
A little too hard to the parent.
But do not blame it on parenthood. And do not use parenthood as an excuse. Because there are so many moms out there that are just trying to get through parenting on Chardonnay. It's not even fun.
In my neighborhood, there's a house that after they drop off all the kids, they all kind of sneak in and then they walk out kind of funny later.
The fun house.
Yeah.
I will say that that's one of the things that happens in the home is that parents, you know, there's team parenting that goes on. Like if you live, you know, you have neighbors or friends, and you go over to their house, and then everybody gets crocked, and you hope that somebody is the designated driver to get everybody home, or that's where Uber does come in handy. You just hope it's, you know, not one of the Uber security issues is coming to pick everybody
up. When my daughter was in preschool, I think there never were more mom's events at, like, wine bars, and, you know, it just seemed like that's where everyone kind of went.
Or you go to someone's house, right, and the kids are all playing, and then the parents are all drinking. And then one kid starts to cry uncontrollably because there's a crash and then a kid crying. And then you go to get the kid and you try to choose the most sober parent to go, all right, you handle this. It's like almost like there's like a test of which one. All right, anybody here medically trained? I don't care how drunk you are. Anybody who, all right, if no, then who's the most sober? Go. Oh, man. And I'm telling you, I think there's a lot of parents out there that would agree with this statement that were it not for alcohol, there would be no children.
Stop.
That could be correct.
Yeah. Well, first in the making of them, and then secondly in the managing of them.
Yeah. I was going for the first part.
Yeah. But
I thought it was snowstorms.
Yeah, that too. Mm-hmm. And right now, and cold, bitter cold, and all of those things. All right.
It's all... coming
in. It's just a mess. So Anne Hathaway, this is not, do not compare those two things. You're dealing with very tricky business if you do that. I wish you the best. Richard Roper will be here tomorrow to explain if that movie's worth seeing.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see, because I do like Matthew McConaughey as an actor. He's
excellent.
He's just outstanding. I like her too.
Yeah.
They both tend to act a little wacky, though. Matthew McConaughey, though, remember his speech when he, I think it was the Oscar, when he's kind of summed up what his wife said about him, and he's like, you know, he kind of went into that Lincoln commercial. He's like, my wife, and she's like this beautiful Brazilian model, said to me, my man, my king, I love you. You know, like the stuff that he would say to himself was kind of putting on his wife.
I know.
Sort of like,
and the whole
it's always
thing
in
is
that
creepy.
Inner monologue. It's always there. That's why those Lincoln commercials, he probably writes them.
I'm going to jump in this pool right now for no reason other than it looks like a fake suicide.
Oh, gee. Oh, gosh.
I wonder if my beautiful Brazilian wife loves me. I have no idea what this has to do with selling you an $80,000 vehicle. But I'm going to do it anyway. I am so thin.
Oh, gosh. Thin. He's in great shape.
He really is.
How old am I?
Remember when you used to get caught in Austin, like, drumming naked in the, on the front lawn?
Yes.
The neighbors would call the police on him.
Woody Harrelson doesn't look this good, does he? I think I'm just going to take my shirt off for no good reason.
Why not?
It's going to help me sell you this Lincoln.
Highly effective, those ads.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, he's been in them for like 5 years now. And they put and they make a Super Bowl one every year.
Oh, that's true. And what they'll do.
I don't know why the cue ball's rolling around between the other balls, though. I have no idea what's going on there.
I don't either.
I know that they're trying to tell you that that the car is, you know, can handle itself. It's like it's I don't actually, you know what? I lied.
Don't try to explain
it. I have
it.
No idea what they're trying to tell you. And is that his wife, who's a good-looking woman, who's staring at him?
I don't. So
shouldn't
think
he
so.
Introduce her at some point? And why is he driving away from the house? Where's he going?
These are unexplainable things, Ro. You can't look for logic in that stuff.
I don't know. All I know is I'm in a new movie. It doesn't make a lot of sense either.